43-yard attempt from the right hash mark. And, oh, he hits the upright again. That's impossible.
Cody Parkey's 43-yard field goal attempt that would have given a Bears lead there by 2 points with just 5 seconds left in the game against the Eagles there on Sunday. It hit the upright and then came down and bounced off the crossbar and back into play. Did not go through the goal, or the posts, I should say, the goal posts, and it was no good. We have found out, though, if you look, there's a video that has a frame-by-frame look of the kick, and it appears... And it shows that the kick by Parkey was actually tipped by Trayvon Hester of the Eagles on the kick. So a lot of animosity from the Bears fans toward Cody Parkey. Bottom line is they didn't finish the game. They allowed the Eagles to score a touchdown under a minute to play in the game. The defense that definitely is one of the best in the NFL and well known for that. The Eagles and Nick Foles went right down the field and scored. Now, obviously, you want your offense to be able to score more than 15 points in a game like that. The Bears scored a touchdown to go up 15-10 and then tried to go for two and miss. So all the Eagles had to do was score the touchdown and take the lead. And then they tried to go for two after their touchdown, and they didn't get the two-point attempt. So it was a one-point lead, and man, the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky went down the field, got themselves into position for the field goal, and then Parkey's field goal missed, hits the upright, and then the crossbar, but again, just a little bit of a fingertip by Trayvon Hester on the kick kind of altered that route. And Trayvon Hester said after the game, he's like, I didn't think I got enough of a hand on it, but in the end, it was just enough to alter it a little bit. And we talk all the time, football's a game of inches, and that was a perfect example of it on Cody Parkey's kick yesterday. So the defending champion Eagles are still alive, a 16-15 win over the Bears there on Sunday in the NFC wild card. Well, much more on those wild card games, including the opponent now known for the Kansas City Chiefs coming up on Saturday in the divisional round of the playoffs. We'll talk about college hoops this weekend. Not a good weekend at all for the area teams. Also, college football national championship coming up tonight. And also, Kansas State's new football coach picks up another championship. So it's all coming up here in the Sports Ticket on KD Country 94. Before we get to that, I want to go over some of the local stuff that happened over the weekend for our area schools in high school wrestling. The J.R. Durham Invitational at Norton, where Scott City took first place as a team. Beloit was seventh and Smith Center eighth. Zane Colson of Beloit, first place finish at 152 pounds. Second place finishes for Colton Shoemaker of Smith Center at 113, at River Paula Beloit at 195. Tate Cadle of Beloit at 132. Jaden Atwood of Smith Center at 138. And Brennan Walker from Beloit at 160 all finished in third place. And Aaron Moss of Smith Center finished fourth at 160. A very tough and talented group of teams there at that tournament in Norton, where Scott City again claims the team championship. The Ellsworth Invitational, Hoisington winning the team championship, 176.5 points. Lincoln finished in 10th as a team, but had some pretty good finishes individually, as Chance Bath finished in first place for the Leopards, another championship for him. And Trey Barrientes of Lincoln finished in second place at 220 pounds. So good outings for those folks here this weekend. Full results from the J.R. Durham Invitational at Norton and the Ellsworth Invitational can be found at ncksports.com. Also, one high school game coming up tonight. Red Cloud, Nebraska is at Rock Hills in high school hoops this evening. Girls varsity action starts at 6 o'clock, kind of a rare Monday night game, but again, Red Cloud, Nebraska at Rock Hills here this evening. We have high school basketball coming your way tomorrow night on KD Country 94. Chapman at Beloit. It's also online video stream at ncksports.com. Girls pregame at 5:50, tip at 6, and the boys to follow. And on Z96.3 Through the Lake, I'll be in Osborne, St. John's Tipton at Osborne, and Northern Plains League action. So that's coming up here tomorrow night on our stations on KD Country 94, Z96.3, KDCountry94.com. Again, the Bullet Trojan game online video stream at NCKSSports.com.
The running back, offset to the left of Luck, is Mack. Enters back to pass. He fires to the pylon on the left side. It is caught for the touchdown by Dontrell Inman. Inman beat Charisse Wright, the backup corner, on a pass to the front pylon, and Indianapolis has scored its third touchdown of this first half, and the Colts are stunning this crowd.
There's something about a fast start. You know, you get a team and you put pressure on them when you get the fast start. And we didn't execute quite as well in the second half. Didn't feel like we got conservative. Felt like we just didn't quite execute the way we wanted to in the second half. We had multiple chances to really put the thing away. Didn't do us. The defense kept us in the game. Great team win.
Colts led 21-0 at halftime over the Houston Texans and went on to win 21-7. That was Frank Reich that you just heard from, the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. And, again, just kind of a workmanlike effort early in the game for the Colts. They got out and forced some mistakes by Deshaun Watson early in the game as well, and really just did everything they needed to do to win the game. And the Colts will be the opponent now for the Kansas City Chiefs. We were looking at that going in. If the Colts won, we knew right away. So that kind of took the drama or the guesswork out of it for the Chiefs fans, just to know who they're going to be playing coming up on Saturday in the divisional round of the AFC playoffs, because all the Colts had to do was win as the lowest seed remaining at number 6 and take on the top seed Kansas City Chiefs. Other AFC game yesterday, it was the Chargers and Ravens. The Chargers winning 23-17 over Baltimore. And you know, there's a lot of questioning of whether Joe Flacco should have come into the game yesterday or not for the Ravens as well. But then Lamar Jackson led them after it was a 23-3 lead for the Chargers. Jackson led Baltimore to a couple touchdowns. They couldn't get an onside kick on that final one, and the Chargers were able to kind of let things roll out. Actually, they had a fumble at the end of the game. Did Baltimore. They had a chance still and then fumbled it, and Chargers were able to pick it up and kind of finish things out there in that one yesterday. So, again, Chargers, the Ravens actually punted or kicked deep on their second touchdown and then stopped the Chargers, forced them to punt. But, again, on the third play, their final drive, a fumble was picked up by the Chargers, and with 19 seconds left, they just kneeled out the clock as the Ravens didn't have any timeouts left. So the Chargers and the Colts, both road teams in the AFC, pick up wins as the Chargers move on. And again, at the end of it all, the Chargers will take on the Patriots coming up in the divisional round of the AFC playoffs here. That'll be Sunday. That game kicks off at 12:05. So the Chargers have the Sunday game both weeks. Colts have the Saturday game both weeks as they take on the Chiefs this Saturday. Much more coming up here, just moments on that. We'll kind of wrap up everything else that happened. We already talked about that Philadelphia-Chicago game. And the Eagles, just, man, they find ways to win in the playoffs, and they did it again. Nick Foles just somehow has the magic when it comes to the postseason. I can't explain it, because a lot of people would think that Carson Wentz would be the guy that you'd want there, but Nick Foles seems to have some kind of and you know, they're talking about it on the broadcast yesterday, saying it's not that Nick Foles is better than Carson Wentz, it's just that I think the team realizes that they can win these games with Nick Foles at quarterback, and they've done it before, and it's happened before. So Foles comes in for an injured Wentz, and they win three games, and they win this playoff game, and now they're back into the divisional round of the playoffs, and they'll move on and get ready for some more football here for the Philadelphia Eagles, the defending champions. And they're going to be at the Saints coming up here later this weekend in the divisional playoff in the NFC. That game will be, let me double check on that, that game will be in New Orleans at 3:40 on Sunday. And then in the other NFC wild card game, the Cowboys win 24-22 over the Seahawks. An interesting game there, where Sebastian Janikowski attempting a long field goal at the end of the first half and pulled a hamstring, so they couldn't do much there. And Dixon, their punter, ended up being the kicker, and they didn't trust Dixon at all to kick field goals or extra points or anything. So the Seahawks went for two on a couple different occasions, and they were able to get it within two at 24-22, and then they try to drop kick with Dixon on the you can't even call it an onside kick. I don't know what exactly was, but it just shot straight up into the air, and Cole Beasley caught it for the Cowboys to just run the clock out. It was the easiest field of a kick or an onside kick or a kick that the other team's trying to get back so they can get possession. You'll never see anything much easier than what happened with the Cowboys there on Saturday night, with Cole Beasley catching that just drop kick that went straight up into the air about 20 yards and just right to the Cowboys, and they were able to kneel out the clock and pick up the win 24-22. So the Cowboys then waited to see what would happen with the Eagles and Bears, to whether they would be going to New Orleans or L.A., and the Cowboys will be going to L.A. on Saturday night, as, again, the Eagles picked up the win. The lowest remaining seed goes to the highest, the Eagles at Saints, and then the highest remaining seed goes to the lowest remaining top two team, which is the Rams. So the Rams host the Cowboys coming up on Saturday night at 7:15, and the Saints host the Eagles coming up on Sunday at 3:40. So that's those are the matchups. Again, the Patriots hosting the Chargers Sunday at 12:05, and the big matchup that we're definitely going to be watching and keeping an eye on here this weekend will be on Saturday with the Kansas City Chiefs taking on the Indianapolis Colts. Now, here's a big thing. We talked about it on Friday a little bit going into it, that it doesn't really – if the Chiefs are who they should be this year, the number one seed, they have a first-round bye. We're talking about the game and who they could potentially play, which it was either Colts, Ravens, or Chargers that were going to be coming to Arrowhead coming up on Saturday. And you said it shouldn't matter. Doesn't matter. Don't worry about who they're going to be playing. They have home field advantage, and they have a chance to win this game, get into the AFC Championship, where they'll be at home again. If you are the number one seed and the best team in the AFC, shouldn't matter who you're playing. Shouldn't matter if it's the Colts, Ravens, Chargers. Shouldn't matter if it's the Patriots later on in the playoffs. You should be the team that wins no matter what happens. And I want to believe that. As a Chiefs fan, I definitely want to believe that. And everything we've seen this season, you want to believe that it's going to be different this year under Patrick Mahomes. And it's going to be different when the Chiefs face the Colts coming up on Saturday. But what doesn't give you confidence is what you see with what the Colts did. And we'll talk a little bit about that coming up. But also when you look at the history, and you get a little uneasy when you think about the Indianapolis Colts coming into Kansas City, and when you think about the Colts in general in the playoffs. Because why are you uneasy? Well, you're uneasy because the Chiefs are 0-4 in the postseason against the Colts, and all teams that probably all but one of them should have won, really, when you think about it. I mean, I say should have. You're at home the first two times, you should have won. Everybody knows about the 1995 playoffs where the Colts won 10-7. I don't even like to speak his name, but the kicker, Lynn Elliott, missed three field goals that day, and the Chiefs just stalled offensively at times as well, and they lose 10-7. That was 1995 divisional playoff round. Colts then would lose to the Steelers in the championship game after that. But so that's where this misery started, and the thoughts of the Colts in your mind as a Chiefs fan started in 1995. Then 2003 comes, and you didn't force a punt the entire game. The only thing that stopped the Chiefs, a pass interference call on Tony Gonzalez that I'll never forget. And then kind of the end of the half is the only thing that stopped the Colts, I believe. The Colts won 38-31, never punted in the entire game. And when I look, and when we look at what the Chiefs have done this season, there's so many things that flash you back to that 2003 season. And me as a Chiefs fan, this is why I'm nervous about the game coming up on Saturday. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the other things that make you nervous. But on the surface, a game like what happened in 2003, you get this feeling that it could happen again. You could have a game where neither team punts the football, where there's a play here that just doesn't go your way, where you have maybe a turnover, an interception, or something that happens that doesn't go your way, and you score all these points, but you still lose. And that's what happened in 2003, 38-31. That's what happened in 2013. Now, the other game that we're talking about in the middle of that was 2006, when the Chiefs were banged up and Trent Green went down with an injury. Damon Heward came in and played quarterback, and the Colts were just a better team that year. They won the Super Bowl that year. It was a 23-8 win in the first round in Indianapolis, in the wild card round, I should say, in 2006. So I kind of throw that one to the side, because the Chiefs had no business probably winning that game anyway. They backed into the playoffs that year, shouldn't even made it. They had to have so many things happen to even make it to the playoffs that year. So I kind of put that one in the back of my mind, but the other three you just can't. You can't shake. It's not possible. Colts won 45-44 in the wild card game of the 2013 playoffs, a game the Chiefs led 38-10 in the second half, and Andrew Luck came back and brought them back to win 45-44. Some injuries that happened in that game. We talked about how cursed the Chiefs can be in the playoffs as well. So all that in mind, this is why it makes you nervous to play the Colts this weekend. Now, on the flip side of that, the reason you're not nervous to play the Colts is because you have Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, and you have an offense that can do a lot of great things. And the Colts' defense is good, though. They showed that on Saturday against the Texans, holding them to 7 points, scoreless through the first half, and then giving up just 7 in the second half to Houston. The Colts' defense can do some things. The Colts' running game can do some things, and those are the concerns that you have about this Colts team. But, again, the Chiefs have faced some good defenses this year. Again, the least amount of points they have scored is 26 this season. It's interesting to see the scores from this weekend. The most amount of points scored in a wild card game this weekend was 24 by any team in all four games. And the Chiefs, I read that stat and it kind of blew me away, that the Chiefs have scored no less than 26 in a game the entire season. So they've been more 26 or more in every game this season. And in every wild card game this weekend, the most points scored by a winning team or any team was 24 by Dallas. Chargers scored 23, 21 for Indianapolis, 16 for Philadelphia. Those were the scores and the totals for the winning teams this weekend. So that's a thing that you look at with the Chiefs. You know that they can score points even when they're playing pretty good defenses this season. They've been able to put points on the board. Now, some of that was late against the Ravens. The Ravens had a nice defensive performance, and it held the Chiefs down and in check for most of that game, less than the 26 points that they scored against the Cardinals, which, crazily enough, is the lowest that they've scored this season. But they can score points. That's not an issue with the Chiefs. You're looking forward to seeing what they can do offensively coming up on Saturday, and to see what Patrick Mahomes can do against that Colts defense. However, you know, Deshaun Watson in the end ended up throwing 235 yards, a touchdown and a pick, and had to throw 49 times. And I don't think that's what Houston wants really from their guys. Kiki Kuti had 110 yards receiving against that Colts secondary. But there's so many things that they did well that forced Houston into throwing the football there on Saturday that, I mean, you can't really look at those final numbers. 235 is not a lot of passing yards really in the NFL. And Deshaun Watson was really held in check, 29 of 49 on the game. So he was sacked three times. They can get after the quarterback, but and that's a quarterback that is supposed to be mobile for Houston. Patrick Mahomes, I think, probably a little bit more smarter than Deshaun Watson is, and the escapability is a little bit different with what Mahomes does with his athleticism compared to what Deshaun Watson is doing. But, you know, obviously it's a defense that can get after the quarterback, that can do some good things. And Andrew Luck, you always got to worry about him as well. He was fairly efficient, 19 of 32 with 222 yards there on Saturday. But the thing that sticks out about Indianapolis in this matchup, and we can take a look back at all the history all we want, that the Chiefs are 0-4 against the Colts in the playoffs, and that makes you nervous, and all this other stuff that can make you nervous. But what makes you nervous about the matchup is just the Colts and what they can do. And this is a team that has really stepped it up this season and late in the season. Again, they started 1-5. 1-5 and finished the season 10-6. So they won 9 of their last 10 games to finish 10-6. They're the second team in NFL history to start 1-5 and make the playoffs. The Chiefs were the other one a few years back when they started 1-5, had some injuries early on, and then righted the ship and made it to the playoffs. So only two teams have ever started 1-5 and made the playoffs. The Colts, again, have won 9 of their last 10 of the regular season, 10 of their last 11 overall, including 2 wins over the Texans here this season. They finished the game on a finished the season on a 4-game winning streak. They're hot. They're rolling into the playoffs, and they played well on Saturday, winning 21-7. So I'm throwing out the window anything of what happened in the past, the history of the Chiefs and Colts in the playoffs, and just understanding what the Colts can do with the team that they have this year and the way that they're playing right now. And this team is hot, and it doesn't appear that they care where they're playing. And they've got a veteran quarterback in Andrew Luck. We talked about last week how veteran quarterbacks tend to do better against first-time quarterbacks in the playoffs. Now, first-time quarterbacks are not always Patrick Mahomes. We had that on Sunday as well. I know Wade was talking about that. I get it, it's a rookie quarterback against a veteran, and Lamar Jackson against Phillip Rivers. So we both felt that Phillip Rivers would make some mistakes. That didn't really happen as far as the turnovers, but he missed a couple passes that could have been touchdowns, that could have made that and really a kill shot for the Chargers in the game. But he didn't make those kind of mistakes maybe we thought he would, and they got after Jackson, the Chargers did, and that was another example of a veteran quarterback picking up a win over a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, or not really a rookie quarterback, but a first-year starter after he was injured last year, Deshaun Watson. So now you got your first-year starter, Patrick Mahomes, going up against a very veteran quarterback in Andrew Luck, who has beaten the Chiefs in the playoffs before, and so you're worried about that. But the thing I'm worried about the most is the ability for the Colts to run the football. They had 200 rushing yards on Saturday against the Texans, who have a fairly good front line, typically, but they were not able to stop the run very well, and the Colts really kind of took advantage of that. Marlon Mack finished with 148 yards on 24 carries. That was an average of 6 yards a carry and a touchdown. You average 6 yards a carry against the Chiefs, you're going to be pretty good, and the Chiefs are capable and susceptible to giving up 6 yards a carry. So that's the concern that you have about the Chiefs going up against the Colts coming up on Saturday. And we'll preview the game much more as we go later into the week. Obviously, we'll get Wade's thoughts on that. He's out today, but we'll get his thoughts on the matchup as well. But initial thoughts for me, Chiefs against Colts concern me, and a lot of people think are going to say just because in the past they have not had success against the Colts. They're 0-4 in the playoffs. That's all well and good, but the thing that concerns me the most about the matchup is just the Colts and the way that they're playing right now. They're the hottest team really in the AFC without question, and the Chiefs are going to try to combat that a little bit. Chiefs, I wouldn't say officially stumbled into the postseason, but they did lose two games later in the year, two of their last three games here. And again, the Chargers and Seahawks they lost to, but and beat the Raiders going into the playoffs, which was important, I think, to have that kind of game. But how much does that carry over when you have a week off and now you're taking on a Colts team that is without question a million times better than the Raiders right now? And then the Seahawks and Chargers are teams that are kind of similar to what the Colts want to do. They want to run the football. They got veteran quarterbacks. This is what we're talking about going into the playoffs and talking about during the season. You know, everybody's all, the Chiefs have lost games, but they've been close. They've been in them. Well, they're losing to teams with veteran quarterbacks and running games that are doing well. Okay, every single game they lost this year had a veteran quarterback on their team, and they struggled against the run for the most part. You know, they lost to the Rams. You know, they struggle there against a veteran, not really a veteran quarterback. The Rams would be the exception, but that was a rough game defensively overall. Offensively, had the turnovers, and then the Rams were able to pick up the win. But they do have a running game, albeit Gurley didn't have, like, an outstanding game that night. But the rest of these games, okay, you lose to Tom Brady for the Patriots. You lose to Phillip Rivers. You lost to Russell Wilson, veteran quarterbacks. And teams that have the Patriots aren't known as a running team per se, but they have the ability to use that to their advantage and kind of stretch things out when they need to. Now, the Chargers and Seahawks both had the Chargers just came back. I mean, let's face it, the Chiefs blew that one. There's no question about that. But the Chargers came back, and a veteran quarterback made plays down the stretch. So it's either a running game or a veteran quarterback typically that's beating the Chiefs this year, and we know what happened with the Seahawks. They used the running game and a very solid quarterback in Russell Wilson who caused some problems there down the stretch and dumped in a great pass and helped the Seahawks get the win there. The Chiefs couldn't make a stop when they needed to, and the Seahawks got the victory. So that's what concerns you, is the formula that the Colts have in this game can cause problems for the Chiefs with the veteran quarterback and Luck and the running game that they do have. Now, they got to stick with that running game, and I think that they will. I think they're probably smart enough to know what they need to do to win against the Chiefs coming up on Saturday, because that's what they've done all season. That's how they've gotten where they're at right now. And the Colts are 10-6 on the season, but they've won 10 of their last 11 now after the wild card win on Saturday against the Texans. Now, again, the Chiefs have a lot of things that they can use to their advantage. They've got a great offense. We know that. They haven't scored less than 26 in any game this season. They can move the ball down the field. They've got the weapons they need in Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. Damian Williams is even a sort of a athletic weapon that they have back there. They got the receivers that you need. Could have Sammy Watkins back in the playoffs. We'll have to keep an eye on that. They've got Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, obviously, so they've got what they need offensively. But can this defense slow down Andrew Luck in that Indianapolis running game? That's the question I have. That's the question many Chiefs fans are going to have. Throw the history out the window for a little bit and not worry about the opponent that you're playing as far as that's concerned, but worry about what the Colts are now and who they are this season. And they are the hottest team in the AFC right now. I don't think anybody's going to really argue that with the Colts. So they're playing better football than the top two seeds here, and the Chargers aren't really that far behind. They've played really good football all year, finished tied with the best record in the AFC, I should say. And they're going to be a team that's could cause some problems for New England coming up this weekend. We'll have to wait and see. But this Colts-Chiefs game, I'm concerned about it because of what the Colts actually are right now. And that's what makes me nervous. And listen, and we'll analyze it and kind of make our picks coming up later this week. But on the surface, I don't feel like 100% overly confident about the Chiefs' chances coming up on Saturday when I do come back in with the history of what the Chiefs have done in the playoffs. But Patrick Mahomes, is he going to make a difference? Will it be different under Mahomes? We will find out coming up on Saturday. The game will be at 3:35 on Saturday afternoon. Now, KU plays on Saturday as well, so that game's going to be on Z96.3 Through the Lake. We'll move the Chiefs over to Katy Country 94 coming up on Saturday afternoon. Pre-game coverage starts at 2 o'clock right here on Katy Country 94 and then kickoff at 3:35 between the Chiefs and Colts, the AFC Divisional Playoff on Saturday. Looking forward to it. We'll see what happens in that one. Again, other NFL playoff games, as we mentioned, coming up this weekend. The Chargers are at the Patriots 12:05 on Sunday afternoon, and the NFC Cowboys at Rams 7:15 Saturday night. Eagles take on the Saints in New Orleans at 3:40 on Sunday. All right, we're going to shift now to college hoops, and it was not a good weekend for the in-state teams in college basketball, as Kansas State, and Wichita State all lost, and for the most part, didn't look great in those defeats. Kansas had a lead toward the end of the first half, but Iowa State outscored them 6-0 down the stretch, and then they parlayed that into the after intermission here and just got out to a really good start in the second half. Iowa State ends up winning it by 17, 77-60 over Kansas there on Saturday. So just not the way you want to go. They were outscored. Kansas was 41-28 in the second half. So now your problem with KU right now is the fifth-ranked Jayhawks, which that'll change coming up here today probably. The problem with KU right now is not just the loss to Iowa State. The problem with KU is they played two road games and lost both of them. And, you know, Arizona State was close at times. They were able to pull away the win. And Iowa State, this was just a second-half domination by the Cyclones there on Saturday afternoon and evening. So you're a little bit worried about what KU has. That right before the game, they found out that they didn't have Udoka Azubuike, who was out with a hand injury. And we found out yesterday, more bad news for KU, is the center's been ruled out for the remainder of the season, suffered a torn ligament in his right hand that will require season-ending surgery. I played in just 9 games this season, averaged 13.5 points and 7 rebounds. So they're going to miss that. Obviously, on the inside, you got McCormick, who developed a little bit when Udoka was out earlier this season with his ankle injury. So this is the second time that he missed games due to injury. This time he's, again, out for the year. So you had McCormick trying to develop a little bit as a freshman there for KU, but the post game without DeSosa as well, who's still kind of waiting on a decision on whether they're going to make him eligible the NCAA or not. So you're waiting on that, and all these things that are just adding up for Kansas in the post, and everybody thinks, well, it might be doomsday. But we'll hear from Bill Self on that here in just a little bit. But as far as the loss was concerned there on Saturday, as I have some audio playing somewhere, I need to find out where that's at so I can mute that. But again, the loss on Saturday for Kansas, Bill Self just kind of talked about what went wrong in general and overall.
We played like crap a lot up here, and somehow we hang around at the 10-minute mark and veterans figure out a way. There was none of that today. And as young as our guards are, and this includes even LeGerald, we played very, very, very immature today. And we didn't play selfish as much as we played, how's the correct way to put this? We were, I guess it is selfish, but not from a basketball standpoint, is from everybody went into their own little cocoon when things were going poorly.
And that's Bill Self just in general on the game there on Saturday. Quentin Grimes had 19 points for Kansas in the game. Dedrick Lawson had a double-double, kind of a, for him, a pedestrian double-double with 13 points and 12 rebounds. Just things didn't go the way that Kansas wanted there on Saturday. And when they talked with Coach Self after the game and asked about Quentin Grimes, and you're starting to see some development in him because he was leading scorer with 19 points, which, by the way, is the most points he scored since the season opener with 21 against Michigan State. So clearly hasn't been what KU wants him to be. It probably needs him to be as the Big 12 continues to go on. But again, he had 19 points, and Self kind of just brushed that off. Like, I don't have the cut right in front of me here, but he's basically like, well, every team in the country had a leading scorer on Saturday, and ours happened to be Quentin Grimes. He had 19 points, and he was our leading scorer in a 17-point loss. So he's not putting a lot of stock into that yet. He needs to see more from Quentin Grimes, obviously. He needs to see more from his group as well. But here's the thing. As we look at this, and I saw it all over social media already this weekend, and Seth Davis and all the national guys, oh, Udoka Azubuike's out. Oh, no, KU lost on the road at Iowa State by 17. A lot of teams lose on the road to Iowa State, by the way. Just putting that out there, just so people know. A lot of teams lose to Iowa State on the road. And everybody's freaking out. Is the sky falling? Is this the year KU's not going to win the Big 12? Is it going to happen? I'll offer my thoughts after this cut from Bill Self. Is the sky falling? No, not right now for Kansas, but they did show some deficiencies in the loss there against Iowa State.
But the one thing is it's one game. But now the sky's falling. Well, it's an 18 game season, you know, and the sky's not falling, even though we sucked, and we got to correct some stuff, and the thing that is good about getting beat rather than being edged, I mean, we were beat today, is the fact that it's very evident that we have deficiencies and they need to be worked. Nobody's going to leave out of here thinking, hey, it wasn't that bad. I mean, everybody's going to leave out here knowing how bad it actually was. And sometimes that's not an awful thing to get your team's attention, at least in my experiences in the past. So we've had many games, unfortunately, like this over time. Not, I shouldn't say many, but one a year, let's say. And we got this one hopefully out of the way early in the year. So that means the rest of the season should be smooth sailing.
There's Bill Self on the mentality of whether the sky is falling or not. Listen, I still, Udoka Azubuike is out. Okay, Sylvie DeSoucy, you don't know what's happening with him. You've still got enough talent on this team. You've still got the players on this team that have shown what they can do throughout the season. You're not going to play every game at Hilton Coliseum, and eventually Kansas is going to learn how to play and win on the road. I'm fairly confident in that. And they've had to do this without some key players in the past before. You know, every team gets injuries. Every team has guys step out. Now, the difference with Kansas and, let's say, a Kansas State team that is dealing with injuries that we're going to talk about here momentarily is that they have more guys that can step in and fill in different roles. Now, obviously, if you keep losing guys, keep having injuries, it doesn't matter who you've got on the team, you're going to be affected by that. But, again, just after the game initially, Bill Self saying the sky's not falling, we're going to be all right. Used some strong language in that post-game press conference there on Saturday, but obviously frustrated with a 17-point loss at Iowa State. You just can't have that happen if you want to continue to have the improvement that you want. Now, you can have that happen if you're Kansas because you're probably going to figure things out and be fine down the stretch. I still will say until somebody proves me wrong, until somebody shows different, Kansas will win the Big 12 this year. Like Bill Self just said, it's one game. You have 16 of them left. You're 1-1 of the Big 12 right now. Still 16 games to play, so there shouldn't be any big panic right now. Bill, if you don't trust in Bill Self as a head coach at Kansas, at least in the Big 12 conference season after 14 straight conference titles, or share some of them, but anyway, 14 straight conference titles, he's got the trophies to prove it. If you don't trust him by now, I can't help you as a Kansas fan, and I can't help you as Seth Davis or a national person that's trying to tell me that, oh, this might be the year KU doesn't win the Big 12. Not buying it until I see it, folks. We'll see if it happens or not, but Kansas, they did struggle on Saturday. There's no question about that, a tough 77-60 road loss. Next up for KU, TCU Wednesday night. That game will be on Z96 Through the Lake, and that starts at 8 o'clock with pregame coverage at 7:30. Horned Frogs actually opened Big 12 play Saturday. They won 85-81 at home over Baylor to move to 12-1 on the season. They're 1-0 in the Big 12. Again, TCU and KU on Wednesday night. Also Saturday afternoon, the K-State men, oh, man. I'm glad there was some football on that I could, like, flip back and forth and watch the North Dakota State National Championship and think good things as a K-State fan while I'm watching Chris Klieman and the Bison. We'll talk more about them winning the national championship here at the end of the sports ticket. But, man, DVR was worn out with football and everything else on Saturday, but K-State was ugly to start the game, and there's no other way to say it. Saturday afternoon, they struggled. Somehow fought their way back into the game, but ultimately lost to Texas Tech, number 11 team in the country, 63-57. K-State was down 14-0 at the start of this game. Their first point of the game was on a free throw from Barry Brown, 6:30 into the game. He made two free throws to make it 14-2. It was 14-3 at one point. I don't know how this is possible, but a Division I basketball team of the Big 12 goes 10 minutes and 47 seconds in a college basketball game at the highest level of basketball in college and does not make a field goal until 10 minutes and 47 seconds into the game. How does that happen? I don't care how good Texas Tech's defense is. I don't care how bad K-State's offense is, which is bad. It was so bad that Kamau Stokes, who was supposed to be out for the game, ended up playing anyway. Bruce Weber wanted to sit Kamau Stokes, again, dealing with that foot injury that forced him to miss the Texas game that they lost by 20 points. at home to open out Big 12 play last Wednesday. Stokes was sitting at the start of the game, said he wasn't going to play, told media he wasn't going to play. Bruce Weber basically said Kamau's out for today. And all of a sudden, midway through the first half, Kamau Stokes is checking into the game for Kansas State. That's how bad they were offensively and how much of a spark they needed. They wanted to sit Kamau Stokes with an injury, but he came out and played. Now, the weird thing about watching Kamau Stokes play on Saturday was he played with a sense of urgency and played fairly quick at times. If I was a spectator and didn't know that Kamau was hurt and he wasn't supposed to play in the game, I don't know that I would have noticed that he was hurt. He looked like he was okay to play. But I think the probably point is you want to rest it and get him to 100% health and not risk re-injuring it in a game like this against Texas Tech. But I don't think there was a myth that a lot of people thought K-State was going to go into Texas Tech. I gave him a 2% chance. Actually, Wade gave him a 2% chance. I gave him a 3% chance on Friday, being optimistic that they could win the game. And you get down 14-0, that's pretty much a wrap on that game, you would think. But K-State, give them credit. They fought back, got their way back into it, actually trailed by just 2 points at one point there in the second half with 8:51 left. They got within two. But Texas Tech got the lead back to 10 with 31 seconds left and held on for the six-point victory. But I can't fathom how a team at this level can go 10 minutes and 47 seconds without making a field goal. It's just ridiculous to me. And I don't care if Kamau Stokes is hurt. Dean Wade's hurt. He hasn't been playing recently. It doesn't matter to me. You've got Division I basketball players at the Power 5 level. You should be able to make a field goal in less than 10 minutes of play in a game. It's inexcusable for me. But, again, give K-State credit. They fought back into the game, and they made it a game, which, you know, the frustration level for me on the game would be a little less had they not started so bad. Like, give me a game like this where they lose by six to Texas Tech, and I'll take it any day. And I'll take, I mean, you know, obviously you don't want to lose, but going in, what you expected from this team was probably a 20-point loss like they had against Texas at home. Hey, you go on the road to Lubbock, you're not expecting to win that game. Texas Tech's now 12-1 overall and 2-0 in the Big 12. 13-1, excuse me, overall, 2-0 in the Big 12. You didn't expect to go in and win that game. But you got to play a little bit better than that to start. You can't get off to a 14-0 deficit early, not get your first point until a free throw, 6:30 into the game, and not score a field goal until 10:47, excuse me, into the game. This is not – you can't do it. And that's what frustrated me about the game on Saturday. Not so much the loss, because I expected the loss, but the way they started the game was just inexcusable for me. So K-State loses at Texas Tech against 63-57. The Wildcats now 10-4 overall, 0-2 in the conference, picked to finish second, unanimously almost to finish second. I mean, they had actually two first-place votes in the preseason poll in the Big 12. But we didn't know. We couldn't see that at the beginning of the season. Clearly can't see that now. K-State, again, 10-4 and 0-2 in the Big 12 with a loss. Sperry Brown had 16 points. Cartier John had 11. McCall Maywin had a double-double with 10 points and 11 rebounds. They need more from those guys if they want to win these games. It was a step in the right direction, I would say, offensively for guys like Barry Brown and Cartier Jada. But, again, we need to see consistency from K-State before they're going to win these kind of games and even put themselves right now in the discussion to be an NCAA tournament team. Right now they're not. They're not even a tournament team the way they're playing and the way they're constructed right now. They need Dean Wade back, obviously healthy, that could possibly help that. But, again, still the same team that was a bubble team over the last couple seasons. So we'll see if K-State can get that righted and try to get back to the tournament here this season. It's not looking good at the start of Big 12 play for the Wildcats. Other Big 12 men's scores on Saturday: Oklahoma won over Oklahoma State 74-64, and Texas moved to 2-0. They beat West Virginia 61-54 in Austin, and Bob Huggins' Mountaineers are now 0-2 to start Big 12 play as well. Also on Sunday in men's hoops, Wichita State fell to 0-2 in the American Athletic Conference. The Shockers, another team that, and we talked about, it's going to be a long year. They've got a lot of new faces, and Marcus McDuffie, Samaje Haynes-Jones are really the only two that are well-known and that can provide offense on a consistent basis for them. McDuffie had 24 points. Haynes-Jones had 22. Wichita State led 45-32 at halftime, but Temple came all the way back, forced overtime. Wichita State faltered with turnovers down the stretch and couldn't hold on to it. It went into overtime, and they lost 85-81. Shockers now 0-2 in the American and 7-6 overall. Their head coach, Greg Marshall. What went wrong down the stretch there, Coach?
Just threw the ball to the other team. That's mainly it. We had some opportunities. I have no idea. I'd have to go back and look at it. There's a million thoughts going on in my mind. I just, you know, and I don't want to pin it on any particular play or player. There was a million plays that we could have done better, or, you know, we did some really nice things, but obviously not enough. But we just, the biggest thing that I know is we threw the ball to the other team or out of bounds.
So again, that's Greg Marshall from Wichita State. Listen, we could analyze this all we want, but you don't really have to. Well, like we said, Wichita State's a team that's young. They're inexperienced. They don't have a lot of talent that came back from last year. They lost players that transferred. They lost Shamit to the NBA. Graduation hit them. I think they said 9 guys that had playing time last year for Wichita State are gone from this year's team. Like I said, McDuffie and Samaje Haynes-Jones are really the only two that have experience. So it's going to take them a while to get that thing turned back around. Obviously, Greg Marshall's got a track record there in Wichita to have success, and I think once he gets these guys playing where they need to be playing, there's flashes that you see from Wichita State here throughout the season, but now you got to, kind of like I'm talking with K-State, you got to get that into consistency, and we'll see if Wichita State can turn that around. Again, they're 7-6 overall after Sunday's loss. Women's hoops Saturday, KU lost to Iowa State 82-73 to the 25th-ranked Cyclones. Bridget Carlton's having an outstanding start to the season for Iowa State. She had a game high 33. Iowa State's 12-2 and 2-0. That was KU's opener in the Big 12, as they're 10-2 and 0-1. Manhattan on Saturday, the K-State women won 86-56 over Oklahoma. 5 threes from Rachel Ranke. She led the way with 19 points. K-State 10-4 and 1-1 in the Big 12. So a little update on what happened in women's basketball as well. All right, big game tonight, as there's so much going on. Usually, a lot of times, this would be what we would lead with, but a lot of activity this weekend with the NFL playoffs. The Chiefs know who their opponent is. College basketball is a train wreck for the state of Kansas. But coming up tonight, this will be an interesting game. It's the College Football Playoff National Championship Game. That's the official name for it, as Wade would call it, the College Football Invitational Championship Game, coming up tonight between Clemson and Alabama. This is the fourth time the two teams have met in the College Football Playoff. Again, 3 seasons ago, Alabama won the championship. 2 seasons ago, Clemson beat Alabama for the title on a kind of a last-second play. And then last year in the semifinals, Alabama controlled the game against Clemson, made it to the national championship where they eventually beat Georgia. But again, for the third time in 4 years, the national championship is Alabama against Clemson. The Crimson Tide, number 1 in the country, they beat Oklahoma in the semifinals to get here 45-34. Then they won over, or Clemson won over Notre Dame 30-3. Again, just kind of looking at how they compare the stats on the two teams. Obviously, Alabama number 1, Clemson's number 2. Alabama averaging one of their best offenses that they've ever had, and I would say their best under Nick Saban, averaging 47.5 points a game. They're giving up 16 defensively, so a little bit higher maybe than some teams. Clemson gets a lot of credit for what they do offensively, rightfully so, with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback and doing some good things and coming in as a starter here in week 4. They're averaging 44.5 points a game. But the thing that I don't think Clemson gets enough credit for, maybe, and maybe I'm reading into this and don't pay attention enough, but Clemson's defense is actually better than Alabama statistically. Everything that they do is actually better than Alabama. As far as points allowed, it's 13. Alabama's 16. Yards allowed per game is 274.5 compared to 310.5 for Alabama. Passing yards allowed is 182 to 190. Clemson has the advantage there. Rushing yards is 92.5 to 120. We're talking about teams, too, in the ACC that might have better offenses than the SEC. I don't know that. The ACC's not like some kind of juggernaut this year on the football field, but listen, we talk about Alabama defensively and how good they are. Clemson is just as good or better than Alabama defensively, so it's going to be interesting to see if this Clemson defense can continue to play the way that they are against the Alabama Crimson Tide here tonight. Tua Tagovailoa has thrown for 3,671 yards, 41 touchdowns, just 4 picks. Trevor Lawrence also has just 4 picks this season, has thrown for just under 3,000 yards, 27 touchdowns. He's been outstanding since coming in. Again, Tua Tagovailoa has played basically the whole season except for getting injured in the SEC Championship. Trevor Lawrence only started since week 4. He played in every game but didn't get as significant a playing time until week 4 when he started taking the starting role. So ETN's got 1,500 yards and 22 touchdowns rushing for Clemson. We'll keep an eye on that. Both of these offenses have the potential to be high-powered, high-flying offenses, but their defenses are both good. So we could have a high-scoring game, or you could have a game in the high 20s, I would say, would be the lowest that you'll see in this one. Clemson, Alabama, it's going to be an outstanding game tonight. Nick Saban, the head coach of the Crimson Tide on the matchup here with Clemson tonight.
When you play in a game like this, you expect to play against a great team, and Clemson's all of that. And our players are certainly looking forward to the challenge of playing against a really, really good team. So I'm really proud of, you know, our team and all their effort, togetherness, and things that they've done to be able to have this opportunity.
And that's Nick Saban, the head coach of the Crimson Tide. Clemson coach Dabo Swinney on Bama in the matchup this evening.
You know, really excited about the opportunity to compete, you know, against the best team in the country on the highest stage. This is what we all set out to do, 130 teams, and you have two teams that have the opportunity to compete on this stage, and we're thankful and blessed to have this moment. You know, Alabama has been an unbelievable champion, and, you know, Coach Saban and the consistency that they've had is remarkable.
Dabo Swinney, head coach of the Clemson Tigers. And Clemson, Alabama tonight, we've gone through kind of the numbers in the matchup. Listen, I think this has the potential to be just like the first two meetings where Alabama won by a single possession the first time. Clemson, again, winning basically on the last part of the game on a pass from Deshaun Watson to Hunter Renfro there in the championship game 2 years ago. Playing tonight at Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium, the home of the 49ers. And, man, this has the potential to be a great game here this evening. I'm going to pick Clemson to win this one. I'm going to go 31-27 Clemson over Alabama here tonight. Should be a great game, and looking for a good contest, a clean one, and you always hope in a championship game like this that there's nothing coming down the stretch or a penalty or something late that's controversial or anything like that that happens. You just want a clean game and a good game. By the way, whoever wins this game will be the first ever 15-0 national champion at the FBS level. Clemson and Alabama tonight, both 14-0. Bama number one, Clemson number two in the standings, but that doesn't matter. Once the game is over tonight, one team will be number one based on winning the championship here this evening. College football playoff national championship tonight. Kickoff at 7 o'clock from Santa Clara between Clemson and Alabama. We said that winner will be the first 15-0 national champion in FBS. That's not the case in FCS. This weekend's winner was 15-0, and that's the North Dakota State Bison. Head football coach Chris Klieman of North Dakota State, now the Kansas State head coach. He had been introduced already at Kansas State and has started his job there at K-State in recruiting and all those things that go with that. He's named a lot of his staff, and many of the coaches from North Dakota State are going to be coming to K-State with Coach Klieman. And the North Dakota State Bison winning the championship as they picked up the victory over Eastern Washington 38-24 there on Saturday. So what a game it was. North Dakota State with the victory. And the most impressive thing about all this is North Dakota State won this year. They finished 15-0, but this team has now won 7 national championships in the last 8 seasons. The only year they didn't win the national championship since 2011 was in 2016, and Chris Klieman has now 4 national championships, 14, 15, 17, and 18. So they've won 4 of the last 5, a couple back-to-back championships there. From 2011 to 2015, they won 5 straight, but again, 7 of the last 8, which is a record there, obviously. And also Chris Klieman, it was his 4th national championship, as we mentioned, 14, 15, 17, and 18, and that tied him with Jim Tressel for most national championships at the FCS level in the history of FCS football. Chris Klieman, the new head coach at K-State, leading North Dakota State to their 7th national championship in the last 8 years, winning over Eastern Washington 38-24. So North Dakota State finished the season 15-0, and again, climbing to this 4th state or national championship, excuse me, I should say. I'm just covering high school sports where it's a state championship. But climbing, the most interesting thing I heard from Chris Klieman this weekend, and this comes from the media that I might actually have a chance to talk with Coach Klieman during his time at Manhattan, if I'm blessed to do so. But this is an interesting quote that Chris Klieman left his press conference with on Saturday, and I wanted to play it because you don't get this a lot from coaches. Most of them are just kind of grinches sometimes in the media. We'll just put it that way. Here's Chris Klieman addressing the media as he left. This is the final comments of his press conference there on Saturday.
People of Fargo, thank you so much. It's been a great run. All you guys that have covered me for the last 5 years for sure and 8 years, appreciate you guys challenging the heck out of me. moving forward, I'll do anything for you. I don't know when I'll give you my number. Might be a little bit, but thank you. You know, you guys are the reason why NDSU is on the map all the time. And your coverage of North Dakota State football, and you guys know, is really special. And so I can't thank you guys enough. Now, get yourselves down to Manhattan and watch us play. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody.
Now, I don't know if Chris Kleiman's going to have that same attitude when the heat's on him to try to get this K-State football team where they want to be, because he's going into a team that's not the traditional powerhouse that North Dakota State is, obviously. It's easy to be nice to the media when you're 15-0, when you've won 7 of the last 8 national championships at your level of football. So we'll see if that stays the same, but it seems genuine from Chris Kleiman and everything that we've heard from him. We've said a lot that he says a lot of the right things. You get pretty charged up and interested in what he could be at K-State just by listening to him talk and listening to what he has to say about where the direction of the program could go. The access that he's actually already given media and already given fans to the program tends to tell you that this is just kind of who he is. And he thanked the media and thanked all those guys. It's hard to believe a coach at that level that's had that success would be that kind to the media as he leaves. Like he said, I don't know when I'm going to give you my number, but thanks for challenging me. How many coaches say thanks for challenging me to the media? That's not a typical thing that you hear. But Chris Kleiman is a guy that will be challenged by the K-State media. He'll be challenged by the K-State fans. There's no question about that. So, K-State fans, if you're interested in what happened with North Dakota State this weekend, you got to be excited about where the direction of this team could go. Again, Chris Kleiman's got to prove that at the FBS level. He's got to prove that in the Power 5 level in the Big 12. But the track record right now for who he is and what he is speaks volumes when he just tied Jim Tressel for the most national championships in FCS football history with 4. So understand that. I know he inherited a very good team, but there's a lot of people that inherit good teams that can't keep things going in the right direction and keep things going the right way. We'll see if the Ince guy can do that now at North Dakota State, who's taking over for Chris Kleiman. Matt Ince will have his chance to do that after Bold did it and after Kleiman did it. We'll see if Ince can do that at North Dakota State. Now you got to see if Kleiman can translate that into the FBS level and the Power 5 level. I'm looking forward to it as a K-State fan and also as a media member that will be covering some K-State sports here. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with that program and how he can develop that with Bill Snyder retiring and him taking over. So Chris Kleiman, a great finish to his career there at North Dakota State. 4 national championships in the last 5 years. North Dakota State as a team has won 7 of 8. We'll see if they can keep that going under their new coach, and we'll see what Chris Kleiman can do at Kansas State. 10:06 the time here on Waterside Wake Up and the Sports Ticket here on this Monday, January 7th. Thanks for tuning in today. Have a great day.